Hello and welcome to Platforms for Future. This podcast is about building and scaling B2B platform ventures to help you to accelerate and de-risk your journey with practical tips and insights. In our conversations, we talk to founders, executives, and experts, uncovering what they experienced and learned building their ventures. But we also cover new trends like ecosystem strategies, IoT and data platforms, Web3 and sustainability. This podcast is complementary to our Platform Innovation Kit toolset and the Platform Academy, where you can find more tools and learning opportunities for you and your team. For more information, please visit platforminnovationkit.com. And now, enjoy today's conversation.
Hello, everybody, to a new episode of our podcast, Platforms for Future. And I have my lovely co-host, Natalie, with me. Hi, Natalie.
Hi, Matthias.
And Natalie, today we have a very nice guest. We have Alessandro Pistillo. He is Director of Digital Strategic Projects at BASF, so a very big and traditional company. And we will talk with him about ecosystems and having a positive impact to the environment and to the society, not just about platforms, but really having a really game-changing impact for our environment. So I'm really, really looking forward to this conversation. Hello, Alessandro. Welcome to our podcast.
Hello. Hello, Matthias. Hi, Natalie. I'm really pleased to be here and be part of your podcast series.
Thank you for joining. So yeah, we are also very pleased to have you. Could you give maybe a quick introduction about yourself and also maybe a little bit about BASF to our listeners? I'm sure they know about BASF or they have heard about it, but yeah, maybe something special, what makes BASF so special, and yeah, a little bit more background, a little bit more context for our listeners.
Sure. My pleasure. So first of all, about myself. So I have started my career in the meantime 20 years ago in BASF, and I have got the opportunity to do many things and learn and grow through many roles and functions. I was working also in different geographies. I am basically rather an all-rounder in the company. And since 3 years, a bit more than that, part of corporate strategy and corporate strategy department. And I'm driving basically digital innovation and digital initiatives. And for a role as such, you need to be a person who really enjoys to be in a transformative environment and leave a legacy of change in businesses or in culture and strategies of the company. So that's about me and professionally and about the company, of course. You said BASF is a company which is tend to be very well known indeed. It's the leading world-leading chemical company, a very big company with 110,000 employees working globally, and with 10% of them working in research and development. I mean, quite a innovation focus. 2 billion euros spent in innovation every year. I think chemicals, unfortunately, are not always in a nice spot in general public. But in fact, chemicals are very natural things. I mean, chemicals are all around us, and everything what we touch and everything what is part of the material world is made out of chemicals. And you can hardly name everyday items where there is nothing, no chemical inside, which may not be, have been produced by BASF, and where BASF is providing his contribution. Yeah, so from food ingredients to detergents, cosmetics, toothpastes, right, paints, adhesives, even pharmaceuticals, agricultural solution, plastics, batteries, I mean, you name it. So almost everything is made of chemicals and a lot of BASF products in it. The corporate motto BASF is we create chemistry for a sustainable future. It was coined while back, but it's really as relevant as ever. And this is basically the link of the topic that we will touch today. BSF has an important role in driving decarbonization in our industry and in our society in order to fight against climate change. This topic, fighting climate change is something which cannot be honestly addressed by a company alone. It's not something, not even that a single nation can approach alone, and not even a single industry. And here, and that's the link to your podcast, I think, it's you need to really harness the power of business ecosystems in order to come to terms with this dramatic challenge, which will transform the chemical industry, but which will transform the world as well. BSF has developed a pioneering solution to determine the carbon footprint of products, and perhaps I can explain later what the carbon footprint is. And we are bringing this solution into the market via business ecosystems.
Thank you for providing this this kind of context. And before we jump into this this topic in detail about your carbon footprint calculator and so on, you pointed it out right. So as BASF, you have a unique position in the market or a unique position in the ecosystem as a very huge enabler. So all of your products are used in different kind of end customer products, but also B2B products and so on. So you have a huge impact to all of kind of things. So the position you have is you can easily influence all kind of ecosystems we see emerging at the moment. And I like your point that you said you cannot tackle the problem of sustainability alone. You need to work together with other ones. So how do you see this working together with others, so forming an alliance to tackle this problem? Is this also something you at BASF started, or how do you approach this?
Absolutely, Matthias. And we will definitely get into this topic because it's the central part of this idea, this new business model, basically. Starting with your first comment, the positioning of the chemical industry, it's not a coincidence that the chemical industry is sometimes mentioned as the mother of all industry because it's so networked with all other industry verticals, right? And the chemical industry in itself is alone a heavy and energy intensive industry, right? And being an energy intensive industry, it has a role, also a significant impact on the carbon footprint and the greenhouse gas emissions. Roughly 6% of the global greenhouse gases emission are coming from the chemical industry. But more than that, someone took the chance to estimate that 95% of all manufactured goods are touched by chemical products. So at some point of time, no matter which type of consumer product you are considering, if you want to determine the carbon footprint and the emission impact of that particular product, consumer product in general, you need to get information about the carbon footprint of a chemical raw material which can be used to manufacture that item. And this eventually leads, most of the cases, to a customer asking perhaps BSF or other chemical companies about the carbon footprint data of one of the many products that we produce. So that's definitely to give an importance of the positioning of the chemical industry. And it's not sufficient that BSF now has a super powerful tool to calculate carbon footprint for its own product, and then everybody else either has no chance to do it right now, or is calculating product carbon footprint with different methodologies or different different assumptions. Because then what happens? Happens that if everybody starts to calculate carbon footprint with different methodologies, then there is no way you can have a consistent standard and a consistent so-called carbon accounting, and no way you can determine the carbon footprint of a final product that we as consumer buy, let's say a toothpaste. I just give you an example. Now, today, I mean, you, me, so many people would like to buy perhaps climate consciously, right? And you would like to, you would be ready even to pay more for a product which you recognize being good for the environment, right? Rather than another one on the same aisle of the supermarket. But today, sadly so, there is no way you can really calculate consistently the carbon footprint of a toothpaste, because either you don't have the data, so there is not sufficient data available on all the ingredients of the toothpaste, or there is no shared standard to calculate the carbon footprint of each ingredient in the same way. So then you have a mixed bag of apples and oranges, and people do not know how to calculate the total in the end in a consistent fashion. And that was motivated us to bring our solution into the market, to drive also standardization and drive now a common way to determine and calculate carbon footprint for products and ultimately consumer items.
So, Alessandro, if I understood correctly, the sparking point was, or one of the sparking points was the demand from all the product manufacturers who themselves wanted to calculate the carbon footprint of their products, of which you were an element, which then made you realize that. So you had to first set up your own methodology to calculate on your own product. And then you realized that indeed you were, when you were giving back that data, it was you were giving back to apples or were giving back to oranges, but not necessarily, the data you were providing was not necessarily used in the same methodology and the same way. So you decided to provide a consistent methodology to go further than your own product. Did I get that right?
I would say that we did two major things in the first phase of our journey, right? First of all, was to defining a more prescriptive methodology to calculate carbon footprints in order to ensure reproducibility and comparability of results. And on the other side, also as a second thing, we developed a highly efficient digital solution which calculates at once in a flow, fully consistently and automated in automated fashion, 45,000 carbon footprint or the carbon footprint of all our 45,000 products in less than 1 hour. So that's what we did. We could have decided to keep this solution for us and this methodology for us, but it would have not helped to address the topic that you were mentioning before. So we said, why not bring our digital solution, a calculation technology into the market, which is needed as a tool, of course, but then even more so by distributing such a solution, we can also foster a common standard for calculation of carbon footprint.
So that leads me, I guess, to the question that if it's kind of you're offering to companies who are already who have already got some methodologies, I guess you're offering a consistent methodology. But how do you actually manage? How did you manage to convince and build this ecosystem to adapt and accept your methodology? Because maybe they had already their own. So how did you go about this?
Yeah, that's of course a good question. First of all, unfortunately so, sadly so, Natalie, it's not that every company has clearly a methodology right now to calculate. That's that would be too good to be true. So there is, in general, the desire also to have alignment on standards, and we have consortia, for example, industry associations and cross industry association that work on this thing, on this topic, and we as BSF, as part of this large consortia, are bringing in now our solution, digital solution, but also our methodology, and based on and use this methodology as a basis for an alignment and fully endorsed and aligned methodology for the entire industry. That's what they're currently doing, for example, to get, so to say, a full endorsement and a full buy-in by the entire ecosystem of the entire industry of the calculation methodology. On the other side, we must also say that in terms of trust and legitimacy, it helps that BSF has an excellent reputation in its industry, with more than 25 years experience in so-called life cycle assessments. And the methodology that we have developed in the tool, and then it's embedded in the tool, has been also certified by independent certifying company. In our case was TÜV Rhineland, which is verifying and confirming independently that our methodology is fully in line with the relevant ISO standards. Now, you could say, why are not using the ISO standards to calculate the product carbon footprint? The problem of the ISO standard is it's too generic. It has been built to cover all possible and thinkable manufacturing processes. So it's too broad meshed. So you need something much more prescriptive in order to have something which works for digital calculation and works to generate also consistent results for chemical products, for example. So this joint approach of providing a tangible solution to the need for tools, a tangible solution to the need for a methodology, and also a work together in this consortia, and we are addressing this issue of legitimacy or buy-in, which is behind every standard setting. And you know, speed is also important. How are standards built and established? Also, they're also established and built depending also how fast and quick you are to bring such standards into the market. Think about what happened also with the famous VHS and Betamax story in the past, right? Speed is always also very important.
Yeah, Alessandro, fantastic outline, fantastic context explaining why you have approached this and how you approach this. And it really resonates a lot with me. There are multiple aspects we would like to go a little bit deeper into them. One is about your strategic approach to this and your strategy, how to roll it out. And on the other side, also maybe about talking about trust and legitimacy as a key ingredient for building ecosystems. So I'm sure Natalie also wants to talk about this one because it's her favorite topic.
Yeah, it's my favorite, right?
but maybe coming first to the point of the strategy, and as we always said, we have invented the platform value stack, which is a multiple layer kind of strategic understanding of how to build platforms. And top layer is about engagement, so you bring supply demand together. In the middle, you have the intelligence layer where you analyze, where you rely on the data you collect, and the base layer is about infrastructure you provide. And my understanding about your strategy is that you start, let's say, a little bit like bottom to the top. So you build up an infrastructure everybody can use, which is your calculator. The calculator is based on a lot of data. You mentioned 45,000 of product data or other data you can pull in. So you can create a lot of with this data, but you create this kind of calculator as an infrastructure everybody can use. It's a little bit like an operating system approach here for the whole industry or for multiple industries. So they can use it, and then based on that, they can calculate. So it provides an infrastructure for the thing. So my question would be, how do you see also a platform model evolve in the next years? So say, okay, we started base, but now what comes next?
That's a good way to picture the way now platforms are built and structured. Let me try to give my perspective here. And obviously, where we stand, it's the beginning of a journey, right? So there are many developments which will be upcoming on this topic in the next years. We have developed, let's say, an infrastructure indeed. The infrastructure, you could say, is combining a methodology, which we are basically bringing forward also in association and consortia to get final endorsement, and the tool, right, to calculate, right? So that's part of the infrastructure. With this infrastructure, you can generate data, right? Lot of data, then this data needs to be exchanged, right, among actors in the value chain. Because taking again the example of the toothpaste or anything, right, if you want to get the carbon footprint of the final consumer item, you need to have every single raw material or intermediate material supplier in the value chain to pass on their data to the next customer in the value chain, and this customer to their customer, and so on and so forth, until you get to the toothpaste manufacturer, right? So you need to have data creation, generation, and data exchange. Now, this layer of data exchange and data, which you could say is a data platform, is something which does not exist yet, right? This is something that however, surely gonna be developed in the next year or couple of years or longer, right? So this data platform layer is where, for example, now typically not a single company, but this consortia I was mentioning before, are working on, right? So developing now a data platform layer where all these data are coming and then are exchanged. So there is already value in the interaction of exchanging data here, right? So that could be a basic interaction in this platform. But then, and that's on that one, there is still a lot to be also invented and created. Think about having such a data platform, how many things you could do with this data, right? You could optimize things, you could benchmark things, and perhaps have some even added value services built on top of this data layer where other participant ecosystems can generate totally new business models. We can go into a direction of what is called now Web3, right? So into the direction of a decentralized data platform, which then on top of which you can create some new businesses and some new business model. Honestly, we are not quite there, right? So we are still at this infrastructure level. There are already quite a number of initiatives which are in going to this direction. And we are at BSF as part of this.
Indeed, if I talk about my favorite topic, as Matthias says, the trust and legitimacy, I think it's an interesting way that you've gone used to tackle this, because you're actually starting from a standardization and of course legitimated by your own experience in life cycle management and also about your tools for carbon footprint calculation, but then you're actually not really building the platform until you have the ecosystem adopting that standardization, which kind of legitimates automatically, if I can say it like this, the platform to be created jointly by the ecosystem. So I find that very interesting. And I think we've had many discussions already on this. I think the next, you know, the difference between people or companies building their own platforms and ecosystems building platforms, it's more complicated. It's longer term, but it's the next thing, I think. And it totally supports and tackles this trust and legitimacy element.
Yeah, and let me add something on top of this, Natalie. Indeed, even bringing the infrastructure into the market, right? So this tool into the market is something that we are doing already, harnessing the power of an ecosystem. We are not bringing this solution alone into the market, this digital tool alone into the market. We thought, which is much better to approach this in an ecosystem fashion, by now licensing our IP, licensing our tool to a number of software companies, so software partners, which are now independently of BSF, then bringing this solution into the market, even further developing it, to other companies interested, other chemical companies or companies in other industry interested in utilizing this same tool and this same methodology to calculate carbon footprint for their own products. Why we did not enter the market as BSF, but via these ecosystem partners, the reason are mainly two. One is speed, right? We are not software company and will never be, right? As a BSF, at least not in a short time frame, at least, right? So we leveraging now the competencies of company which are in this space and can bring very quickly and act as a multiplier and bring this solution into the market simultaneously is something that you can achieve only via this ecosystem approach and not by going alone. And so speed is one item, one element of the decision. And the second topic is also, I would say, the data ownership reason, and which is very tied into this legitimacy or let's say this trust issue. You can imagine, in order to calculate the product carbon footprint, you need to access to very company sensitive data. Yeah, so like the recipes of production. Yeah, which is something that no company will be willing to share with others that easily and that freely, and rightly so. Now, can you imagine now BSF coming to these companies and say, look, we help you out to implement this tool in your company, and then we get in touch with such sensitive data. First of all, it would be even illegal in some circumstances. But this type of data transparency is something that will not be will never be materialized in that sense. So having now an ecosystem partner bring as a solution independent of BSF into the market fully eliminates this problem of lack of trust and of data confidentiality and data privacy, because every company will be on its own in generating its own data and generating transparency in their own portfolio. And every company will decide by itself which data will then be shared on the data layer, right, later on. So summarizing, this ecosystem approach is on one side accelerating speed, right? And on the other side is a way to address this trust topic.
Dear listeners, I hope you enjoy our podcast and you can learn more about building and scaling a successful platform business. I'm Matthias, CEO of Fastbreak One. And as you know, we at Fastbreak One are platform entrepreneurs by heart. Since over 20 years, we are building new platforms, and this makes us one of the most experienced platform venture builders around the globe. If you are a corporate and you tried out different strategies, consultants, IT partners, but your platform initiative struggles to scale, please check out our assessment services. For example, we work closely together with a leading insurance company who tried to establish a platform for 2 years, but the results were below expectations and the risk to fail was very high. Within 1 month, we helped them to understand the bottlenecks and created a step-by-step plan to scale. Today, we are working very closely with the company and the platform became a market leader. Yes, we are no consultants. We are entrepreneurs and we love to share the risk and go full in building new platform ventures. Learn more about our experience and our practices of work at our website www.fastbreak.one or send us an email to contact@fastbreak.one. And now let's go back to the conversation.
Yeah, I think the whole approach here you show and you applied in the last years absolutely makes sense. And it clearly shows the difference between a kind of an ego way of thinking and an eco way of thinking and acting. So first it started with recognizing that you can't change everything by yourself. So you need other ones to join. Second is you need to build trust between the parties. So you need to build, also provide infrastructure that everybody can really exchange, talk about the same thing. So you're building kind of a standard and you also bring in your strengths. So you say, as you said, you're not a software development company, not now. So your strength is in other areas. So everybody should bring in his strengths to build and form and shape this ecosystem. So I really, really like it. But also maybe to be really honest, what is maybe also the motivation of BASF? So of course we are living in a world where each company also needs to think about his position in the market, his position as a company. You need to survive. So what is also maybe a motivation of BASF to go into this direction? Or what kind maybe benefits you hope are there for BASF?
Yeah, I think we should not neglect and actually that's the primary reason why we kicked this off, of a driving standardization. It's important to have a clarity on the competition rules, so to say. Well, when you compete in the market, and the market should always be competitive, and you want that the way now the competition takes place is at least predicted. I mean, you can be creative with the way that you act in the market, but the rules should be clear and should not be now tweaked here and there, depending on what is your benefit, right? So having now spent so much work in defining a standard and then keep it for yourself and not trying to bring this as into the market as a standard which applies to everybody, it simplifies a lot the way you can act then into the market later on, right? So driving standardization as a value in itself. And standard, why? I mean, driving standardization in product carbon footprint and determination, you must say, well, that's not so important. But very soon, and actually for some companies already now, carbon footprint will be an important procurement or purchasing criteria. So products will not be bought only based on price, performance, and other quality features, but will also be bought now based on some of this element or this KPI, which is what is the climate impact of this product. So having clarity and standardization on this level is fundamental, and that's a great value, huge value for us. With that being said, having also recognizably developed a tool, which is pioneering and other company needs and want, and by licensing now this product into the market, you can also generate tangible value also out of it, right? So because suddenly the intellectual property that you have created also is not now there and idling, right? But also generating value in itself, right? So as a, as an income. Now, this is definitely not is what was not the our primary concern and our primary reason why we start kick this off. But that's also an aspect which brings also benefits to BSF as well. But yes, not only to us, to all the other users in the ecosystem, because you need to find that all the sides of the ecosystem have a benefit out of the whole thing, right? And we can get into that later if you want.
But indeed, again, I was thinking when I earlier I was talking about trust and legitimacy, I was thinking about trust and legitimacy of the platform itself. But in fact, what I'm understanding here is that you're the one of the reasons you need that platform and that standardization is to actually also legitimate yourself and whatever information you're going to give about your products and the fact that it has to be credible and reliable. So it's interesting to see it that way too.
Yes, exactly that.
Yourself and the other members of the ecosystem. So this legitimacy will also be a benefit for the other ecosystem players. But are there other benefits that the players in the ecosystem will find beyond this legitimacy thanks to the standardization?
Well, for sure. I mean, you know that an ecosystem can, or a platform, whatever, right? It can only work if there is a benefit from joining to all players, right? Now, the nice thing of ecosystems and platforms is the fact of being multi-sided, right? Which enables to create value in many more ways than in a pipeline business. On the other side, it's much more complicated to assess, because then you need to take every possible perspective, right, to have every single player in the ecosystem. And now let's take the ecosystem as of today. Yeah, is made by let's say different actors. You could say the other manufacturing companies, so other chemical companies or other companies in other industries. This is one actor. Another actor are software companies, which are collaborating, partnering with us to bring the solution into the market, so the software houses. But then we also quite a number of consulting companies and both specialize in sustainability or generic strategic consulting companies. And now the value for a manufacturing company to join the ecosystem is, well, it's relatively straightforward. They may have a need for a state-of-the-art tool, right, to calculate and create transparency on their own carbon footprint, on their own portfolio, and have a better capability to understand what drives emission and how you can reduce them, right? So having a tool that have these features and these benefits as a value for a manufacturer in itself. Plus, as a manufacturing sharing a standard has the same value as it is it has for us, right? It's set for BSF, right? Having clear rules of the game lined up. And then software company, right? Software companies see great value in the decarbonization, right? Trends. And the software partners that are partnering with us see can profit from a drops-in solution, which has been developed by us for our industry and is perfectly suited to our industry. And then they can bring into the market leverage also our brand recognition and our recognition as a company, our legitimacy, and bring this solution to the market and penetrate a promising new segment of the software space. And consultants, right? This life cycle assessment consultants can also expand thanks to endorsement by BSF or by our the other manufacturer or the this association I was mentioning before. They can also have the possibility to expand their footprint in the chemical industry and in other industries as well, right? So there is benefits on all these three actors in this nucleus of the ecosystems. And the nice thing of the ecosystem is it evolves, right? And it has a life in itself. And who knows how many other benefits and how many other new business model can be created on top of this ecosystem, especially when the data layer will be there. And then on this data layer, you can generate now additional services and value.
Yeah, very good point. I think you need to keep it open for the ecosystem itself to figure out what are the most valuable use cases and how they can use it and so on. So being more open and being open as an ecosystem is really, really important. And looking at your approach, and it looks like a blueprint you can give other ones to build up this kind of an ecosystem. But I'm also sure on your journey from maybe the last 2-3 years, you learned a lot. You learned a lot about what went well, what went not so well. Maybe you can also give some one or two points you witnessed and you learned and you would recommend others to avoid, because we are always asked by people, by companies, hey, we want to approach this ecosystem thinking, we want to build up ecosystems. We know we have to form alliances with other ones, but it feels not that easy. Are there any kind of best practices we can use? What is so important to form an alliance to build up an ecosystem? Maybe you can share some kind of one or two major learnings you went through. What you would say you would like to maybe you would do different compared to 2 or 3 years ago?
Yeah, that's you always learn, right? And there's always things that after looking back, you are satisfied of and things that you may have done better. Let's perhaps stay on the positive side first. We are definitely satisfied with the speed, both in the development phase of the tool, which was pretty internal, right, and in the go-to-market of the tool, leveraging then this ecosystem of partnership I was describing before. So we went into the market as pioneering, so nothing to be said. So definitely can only congratulate to the colleagues and our team members which were working on this. It's great what has been achieved. I mean, the key ingredient there for success has been the tight collaboration, and which is behind also agile development, right? So to have end-to-end collaboration of different departments, not different silos, but people brought together into a task force and capable to address in an interdisciplinary way the topic. I mean, building a carbon footprint calculation tool entailed for us bringing together in one team people, just to say, from people from sustainability, right, department, people from the IT organization, people from the accounting. Yeah, you would not think about, but people from finances, accounting, super important here, and people from procurement. So functions that you may, they may not be, have been cooperating every day in the past, but for this product, developing this product, bringing it all together was fundamental. And working in an agile way was, fundamental in that sense. Another fundamental ingredient was, as always for transformation, was, and you heard also in other podcasts in the series, top management support, right? If you don't have this, it's difficult to drive transformative projects through among now the several priorities that you always have. So you need to have someone who supports, and the CEO of our company was fully supportive from day one in these activities, assigning high priority to the topic, despite the uncertainties and the unsettling circumstances of the pandemic crisis. I mean, our tool was developed in an agile way during the first shutdown period, if you think about. So these are important ingredients. So collaboration, inter-disciplinary collaboration, agile work, and top management support. In the go-to-market, again, speed, collaboration with other companies which can join forces and bring their own competencies, so the software companies. So we manage basically to bring the company, the product into the market in 3 months, right? With software companies which have already a distribution network of people who are capable to build software, to distribute software. And it was possible to bring with warp speed the product into the market, right? But there are also things that we learned, of course. There are things that you may want to know that may not have gone as good as they could have gone.
So thank you, Alessandro. So maybe you can continue and explain a bit more about also a major learnings you had. Or major failures maybe others could avoid.
Sure. I mean, one thing that is always should always be top of mind is ensure that you are not too complicated, right? That you slice the scope and the project into a manageable scope and a manageable product. Now it's like a minimum viable product could be, or a minimum viable scope. In our case, we took a very ambitious approach to roll out this solution, this tool, globally in all business at once. Right. I mean, for us, it had some justification because most of our major manufacturing sites are, all right, our major manufacturing sites are highly integrated manufacturing networks where all many businesses are involved all together. So it made sense for us to have a more holistic and broader approach from day one. But what we recommend, for example, now to companies now embracing the tool and the solution new is perhaps to have a reduced scope to start, right? Roll it out this first and then scale later. So a minimum viable scope, so to say, approach. So that's one of the learnings and I think one of the recommendations as well. Another thing, we developed the tool as an internal tool, right? And we developed it without thinking that we would have wanted to bring it to the market later. Now, if you develop solutions for internal use, you you document things and you show things in a different way than what you would do if you would know early that you want to bring it to the market. This, of course, brought some issues in the end, right? For us, we managed to cope with it. But I think that whenever you develop something, thinking that this can be also externalizable, right? I think a learning that is important for us, and it should be important for everybody. If I'm not mistaken, is one of the mantras of Jeff Bezos in Amazon, right? To have externalizable application all the time, right? So this type of learning is very important. I mean, we are probably not as experienced as Amazon in the platform business, right? But we will definitely learn out of this. What is a recommendation? Learning for myself, right? And then what is a recommendation I could give to other people interested in launching platform business models and so on and so forth, is always look outside of the boundaries of your company, right? But simple. But then always look at which type of partnership can help you to boost one of the following three things: scale, scope, and speed. So boosting scale, scope, and speed should be the criteria which help you to identify the right partners to build the ecosystem. And last but not least, especially if you are working in launching your own business and a startup, but also in a corporate world, in order to launch solution like this and develop platforms, you definitely need to be fearless. So that's also an important feature that you need to have, definitely.
Wow. Thank you very much for all of those learnings. Fantastic. As you can see, maybe here or not here, I don't really have so much to comment here because I really like the approach you applied here. And I'm really also surprised to hear that from a very traditional incumbent company like BASF. So the whole approach you applied here is really fantastic. And I'm really, really looking forward to try to follow your activities and follow what are the outcomes over the next years. And thank you, Alessandro, for joining our podcast. Fantastic learnings and fantastic journey you went through, a fantastic product you are building. And it's really should be definitely a blueprint, and we will try to socialize it as best as we can with the world, and so that others can also follow your journey and follow your approach. Thank you very much for joining.
Thank you, Matthias. It was and Natalie, it was a pleasure to be here, and also fun. All the best to you and with your also next podcast in the series. And we'll be happy to meet you again with the developments in perhaps a couple of years down the line.
Thank you very much, Alessandro. It was very a very interesting learning and journey you took. Very atypical, I find. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And looking forward to see you again. Thank you very much. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.